Well, hello there, ladies and gentlemen. The MSS crew is back and on the attack, welcoming you to the Fred Bertelsen Memorial Old-Time Radio Room of RadioOutOfThePast.org. Today's date is Saturday, December 10th, 2016, and this is your MSS host, Luis Jr., assisting with bringing to you yet another exciting and exhilarating internet broadcast of Michael's Saturday Night Surprise. Well, folks, we've got another OTR surprise waiting, locked and loaded, getting ready to be released for your listening enjoyment. Allow me to introduce the presenter for tonight's program. He just so happens to be a very spiffy gentleman who prefers his martinis shaken and not stirred. If you haven't guessed it already, it is Ron Bond. Yep. Agent 008 is here and ready to treat you to his particular brand of OTR surprise. So without any further delays, I would just ask if everyone could please sit back, grab your favorite snacks and drinks, and enjoy the program. Mr. Bond, Ron Bond, the microphone is yours.
Good evening. This is Michael's Saturday Surprise for December 10th, 2016, and I'm Ron Bond. I've got two programs for you tonight. First, Golden Hubcap. We're going to hear all about the epidemic of stealing hubcaps. Apparently, this was quite widespread. There's no date on this program, but it sounds like it might be October 14th, 1956, because it does mention that date somewhere in the program. From October 14th, I'll call it 1956 Golden Hubcap.
The sound you have just heard was the immediate and efficient removal of a sharp 1956 hubcap from a sharp 1956 automobile. The hubcap removed may be viewed by the interested owner, sundry citizenry, and appreciative teenagers at your nearest high school or neighborhood drive-in, immeasurably enhancing the sleekness of that cut-down hot rod squirreling past us en route to a ball, 1956 teenage style.
Columbia Pacific Radio Network presents Golden Hubcaps, a story dealing with an illegal traffic that has grown into mammoth proportions throughout the United States, the theft of automobile hubcaps. The tapes you will hear are real.
What kind of hubcaps do you have on this car prior to this?
I'm in the back trunk of 51 Mercury.
It's a right wheel different from the other. That's what I wondered if that was the record.
They're all different from the other side.
Where'd you get these two?
I got them from him.
Where'd you get the two on the back?
Some guy gave them to me.
Huh? Some guy?
Yeah.
Who?
I don't know who it was. I mean, it just...
Damn. Sure you didn't,
No, I never. I swear to that.
Swear to what?
That whatever you're...
You'll swear to what?
That's why I didn't take them off any car, that's all.
My name is Tom Harmon. One of the voices you've just heard was that of Lieutenant M.B. Myers of the Auto Theft Division, Los Angeles Police Department. The other voice...
Swear to that.
Swear to what?
Whatever you...
You'll swear to what?
That's why I didn't take him off any car, that's all.
Does the voice ring familiar to you? A neighborhood boy? A best chum of your own 17-year-old? Or the kid who yelled at you last night when the lights turned from green to red, and exhaust fumes of a two-tone convertible told you once more the highways are beckoning the young in tremendous numbers. Today we're going to meet quite a few of these youngsters, some in serious trouble, others perhaps following. And we're going to meet quite a few people concerned over the welfare of these sons of yours. For though an automobile hubcap may seem to be a strange topic for CBS Radio to devote a full half hour of its time and facilities to developing, the fact that I am talking to you now means that many interested parties want you, the automobile driver, to be aware of a problem that is growing out of all proportions to what it should be. Too many people are losing, not only the victim of theft, but the child who steals, the parent who closes his eyes, and the public who is too often indifferent. Listen to a police officer in the Maywood District of Greater Los Angeles tell you what the hubcap problem is in police eyes.
They far outnumbered all of the rest of our crimes put together, with the exception of checks. The amount stolen from the automobiles was larger than all of the armed robberies, burglaries, and other types of thefts put together. So it's by far the greatest problem we have at the present time.
The theft of hubcaps is not a police problem solely. Far from it. Recently, I visited with Mr. Albert H. Wood, manager and director of public relations of the Western Insurance Information Service. And what he had to say took the hubcap problem forever out of the kid prank class.
Hubcap loss claims alone paid by casualty insurance companies throughout the country amounted to some $3.5 million. One company right here in Los Angeles reported that during 1955, some 884 hubcap claims were paid through them, averaging approximately $25 each, or a bill for more than $22,000. And when you figure that there's some 500 or 600 companies writing automobile insurance in this state, the loss or theft of hubcaps could easily run into the $1 million bracket.
Facts and figures on an insurance company ledger, one might say. So? But now, here is vivid evidence that facts and figures have living breath, frightening and stark, such as lived by a Los Angeles businessman not too many months ago.
We had the unfortunate experience of shooting one of these juveniles, not knowing he was a juvenile at the time. We heard a noise one night in the garage, and since that shortly before that time, one of my neighbors heard them working on the car, and they made an attempt to run him down. I put my gun in my pocket and went down, and they were trying to take the car, and I told them to stay where they were, and they made a run for it, and I shot in the dark and injured one of the juveniles. He fell in the street, and I came in and called the police and an ambulance immediately, and they took him to the hospital, and the boy is out and around, I understand, and fully recovered.
Then the story of Golden Hubcaps is real, and it covers many hours and days of meeting victim and thief, merchant and businessman, kids and policemen. And frankly, the project of telling you about hubcaps has become a part of me. For I learned quite a bit about a subject that I feel goes much farther than the theft of hubcaps alone. It concerns youngsters and their future, as well as the immediate loss of hubcaps to an automobile driver. So let's meet the problem head on. How does a hubcap thief operate? Listen to an actual questioning session in the office of the Chief of Detectives, Arcadia Police Department, Arcadia, California. Along with Lieutenant Myers of the Los Angeles Police, the detective chief is questioning an 18-year-old youth held in police custody on suspicion of auto theft and theft from auto, which included hubcaps.
Well, I stole one set of hubcaps in Glendale, and first we headed out for Hollywood, and we just messed around out there, you know, just looking around and all that. Then we seen these hubcaps on a Chevy, so we popped them off, put them in the car, and then went a couple of more blocks down by the Greyhound bus depot, and there was an Oldsmobile sitting in there, so with spinners on it, 56, so we popped the ones off of there.
And how long would it take you to get 4 hubcaps off of a car?
Well, two guys doing it, it didn't take more than a minute. Less than a minute.
What do you use to get the hubcaps?
A screwdriver.
How about a church key?
Well, no, it's too much work to do it like that. I had a big, long screwdriver, and all you had to do was just stick it in once and just pry it off, and it just pop right off.
Are you concerned with the noise that it makes in your particular...
Well, when you're doing it that fast, I mean, when you got a car sitting there running, you know.
Get away with the car.
Yeah. Huh. There's not too much...
Was this at daytime or nighttime?
Oh, this is at night.
Oh. Late?
When we got the hubcaps, it was around 12.
Now listen. Our young man, just speaking, has eager young followers coming up in the ranks, as told us by Officer Childers of the Whittier Police Department.
I processed two juveniles, age 11 and 13, last Saturday. They were caught stealing hubcaps during the week, and they said that they had heard so much about it from the older kids that they thought it would be kicks to try it.
It's a big traffic, this theft and use among juveniles of automobile hubcaps. Long Beach Juvenile Officer Pearson echoes these facts.
Certainly that's a big traffic among juveniles, is the theft of hubcaps. It's a big headache.
So when you have a headache, you take a pill. Starting today, October 14th, on through October 20th, is Oil Progress Week. And during this week, the Oil Industry Information Committee of Los Angeles, made up of all segments of the vast oil industry, dealers, jobbers, and large and small companies engaged in production, refining, transportation, and marketing, is inviting you, the automobile driver, to take a special, sweet-tasting pill they are offering. Free identification of your automobile hubcaps at any service station or automobile dealer displaying a hubcap identification service poster. This is the oil industry's contribution to protect its customer, you, by making available a method which will help reduce the theft of automobile hubcaps by personal identification.
I'm Height from Vernon PD, and I'd like to point out that the idea of the identification of these hubcaps is going to make us feel rather good. We're going to be able to do a little better job. For instance, the uniform officer stopping the juvenile in the field and seeing upwards to 6 and 8 sets of brand new hubcaps in his automobile and literally not being able to do too much about it. But now we can probably handle it many times right in the field or right in the station without too much harm to the kid or his parents, get it settled and show him that we do know what's up and it is a serious thing. And I think that it's going to be very effective, as was pointed out before, in a preventative measures.
Marking of hubcaps will be accomplished by special engraving tools being furnished dealers and service station operators. Identification will be your license number engraved on the outside of each hubcap at the valve stem hole. Police say it'll cut down hubcap thefts almost 75%. I attended a luncheon recently in which numerous police officers were present, and I heard firsthand what this hubcap problem means in police terms and experience. Listen to a few of them as I did.
I'm Officer Lennon from Bell. Just the other day I had information, it hasn't been checked out yet, that we have one fellow working in our area, an adult. He has approximately 25 to 30 juveniles out every night picking up hubcaps for him. We have the first name only of this man. We believe he's in the Compton area. The information we have is that he is a heroin addict.
Wolf, Monrovia PD. We had an interesting case come up on our last Monrovia Days affair at Recreation Park, where a juvenile was picked up, and in the process he was shook down, and we found a beer can opener in his pocket. We asked him what he did with the beer cans that he had. He said he didn't drink beer. He used a beer can opener to take hubcaps with.
I had a case a few years ago. He made his entire living from stealing hubcaps, but whether he used narcotics or not, I had no knowledge of. He had a workshop where he'd refinish some of the hubcaps that were marred a little bit before he'd sell them to other service stations. I recovered around 500 hubcaps from various service stations that he'd sold them to that had them up for sale on racks.
We got 4 in custody right now, 2 of them juveniles and 2 of them 18. The one was an unusual story in that 2 boys were involved in a speed contest, and the 18-year-old had to appear in court, and his fine was $53. He asked the judge for a continuance on it to get the money, then went out and stole himself 5 sets of hubcaps and paid the fine.
And the kids are busier than ever, as told me by an officer of the San Gabriel, California Police Department. His voice mirrors the seriousness of the problem for us all.
Most of ours have been removed at the bowling alley, theater, and now they're beginning to hit the San Gabriel Country Club. They're hitting as much in the daytime as they are at nighttime now.
The Los Angeles businessman, whom we heard from earlier regarding his almost tragic episode on boys stealing his automobile hubcaps, is afraid.
And I'm afraid that we have trained a bunch of young salesmen, or they've been hearing too many things on psychology.
Whether our youngsters engaged in the hubcap traffic are salesmen or amateur psychologists may be a point open for question. But that they are aware of what they are doing when they steal hubcaps can be heard from their own lips. Listen.
How long have you had that car?
How long?
Yeah.
Oh, about, since about November last year.
And were those hubcaps out when you bought them?
No, I bought them from Buick.
Do you have a bill of sale for them?
Of the hubcaps, yes.
Can I see it?
No, I don't have it with me.
Where is it?
Oh.
And you have a bill of sale on it?
I think so.
You think so, yeah. Or are you sure?
Oh, I think I could find it. I'll look around a little bit.
Should we go down and look?
Oh, you want to go down and look?
Yeah.
Go.
Okay.
I might line it back up again. I chickened out. We're not going to my house.
Why'd you chicken out?
I'm afraid.
Afraid of what?
Police. I'm not afraid of the police, actually, but what if I couldn't find this bill of sale? Then you'd have to take my hubcaps.
And here's a youngster who went his counterpart one better.
Where did you get the hubcaps?
I brought them.
What kind of hubcaps are these?
These are Dodge.
Lancer?
Yeah.
Dodge Lancer hubcaps?
Mm-hmm.
How much did you pay for them?
$35.
$35?
Yeah, plus tax. Yeah.
Do you have a receipt for the hubcaps?
Yeah. I just got them the other day.
Oh, recently?
Yeah.
Did you sign this?
Yeah, I wrote that up.
What?
He was sort of, yeah.
You wrote this up
yeah.
yourself?
Uh-huh.
You mean you wrote the bill?
Yeah.
As we've heard two boys and how they protect their hubcap interests, let's listen to two police officers who have run into just what we've been listening to. Youth aware of the limits of the law.
We've had a lot of kids in the past where they've had off-breed hubcaps on their cars, where they have had phony bills of sales for the cars. We know they're phony, but there's no way of checking them out. The name doesn't jive or the address doesn't jive. They possibly could have bought them, and the fellow that sold them to them could have gave them a phony address.
The suspect is in custody. He's out of state, but we have information that he carries in his toolbox in his car at all times several bills of sale for hubcaps, so that anything he runs onto, he's well covered.
It is true that the majority of youngsters questioned by police realize the authorities have no proof if the hubcaps in question are rightfully theirs or if they are stolen. So the stories given police vary in intriguing degrees. But the police believe one of the paramount reasons for theft is this.
Most of the kids would steal them for the purposes of selling them to other juveniles. And as the remark came out, maybe a $25 hubcap would be sold for $2 each. Many of the hubcaps were sold to used car dealers, junkyards, and what have you.
And if and when the young thief is caught, what is usually the parent's reaction?
The parent don't want to believe that their child would steal an article that didn't belong to them. Most of the time we had 100% cooperation.
But the police officer talking to us now, who is a detective with the Inglewood Juvenile Detail, states this further interesting bit of information.
Many times we'd have where the parent had actually furnished the $5 for this individual to purchase the hubcaps from another individual, and then from that to even a second and third party before we did find out that they were actually stolen property.
That the kids steal from each other is the old maxim of no honor among thieves put into inconvenient reality. And the youngsters find themselves enmeshed in their own devilment, as one high school boy explained to questioning police officers.
Where's your hubcap?
Oh, I took them off because I went to a football game last night.
Well, what'd you take them off for?
Because I didn't want to get them swiped.
And let's not leave the girls completely out of the picture. Here's a young lady the police stopped near a Los Angeles high school just recently.
Where did you get the hubcaps on your car?
They were given to me.
By whom?
A friend.
What's his name?
Jack Jones.
Where does he live?
Glendale.
Well, do you know the address?
No, I don't.
Do you know where he got them?
He bought them.
So the story of the golden hubcap could go on and on, and we could bring you taped interviews of youngsters far into the night. But the problem of hubcap thefts concerns all, not just the youngsters. Whether you be a private citizen or an automobile dealer, the youngster who steals is not just to be condemned and forgotten or stopped with guns, walls, and bars. He must be helped to stop by all of us removing the temptation that is constantly before him. The Oil Information Committee's program to identify your hubcaps is that step. And support of it comes not only from the police, but from private citizens, such as the businessman heard earlier.
Well, I feel that this marking of the hubcaps is one of the very best solutions that we can have, plus the fact that if the automobile industry can be talked into making it more difficult to remove hubcaps because the time element is such an important thing, the marking of hubcaps should discourage the thing as well as anything that we can do, because once these youngsters realize that all hubcaps are marked so that it cannot be removed, I believe it will stop them cold, because it's too easy to follow them up.
And such automobile dealers as Bob Yackel of Yackel Oldsmobile, who also joins in endorsing the new program of hubcap identification.
Well, Harmon, I want you to know this, that I'm real happy as an automobile dealer to see all the cooperation that the people are putting in and getting behind this movement to mark hubcaps. It was so bad, they were being stolen so often, that we stopped selling them. We recommended to our customers that they just wouldn't buy them, because you couldn't go a week or 10 days without them being stolen off a car if you ever left a car unattended any place. I'm real happy to see everybody getting behind this movement, because it's going to stop the juvenile from stealing the hubcap to start with, and that's what we're all interested in, is keeping our youngsters from even committing a crime, not prosecuting them after it.
Another prominent automobile dealer in the Southern California area is Ben Barclay of Barclay Motors. This is what Ben had to say.
Well, Tom, I'll tell you what I'm going to do about this thing. I'm going to cooperate with it 100% by marking each hubcap with the license number of the car. This will tend to cut down the juvenile delinquency of stealing hubcaps and also the receiver of such hubcaps from a sales standpoint.
Only through the cooperation of the automobile driving public will the projected program of the Oil Information Committee realize success, not only in Southern California, but eventually throughout the entire West and the United States. Hubcaps are not just stolen in the Los Angeles area, but everywhere. Perhaps one of the prime avenues of sale, or should I say, attempted sale of hubcaps, is to the neighborhood junk dealer. He meets the hubcap salesman daily.
They come in 5-6 kids at a time, at least 2-3 times a day they come in. They either wish to sell it to us or trade it for another type of hubcap or for some other type of parts.
What are their ages?
They run from kids 9 and 10 all the way up to grown boys of 21, 22.
How do the youngsters explain their possession of hubcaps, often sets from 1956 Oldsmobiles, Dodges, or other high-priced automobiles?
They're pretty clever. Usually, if they have a Ford cap they want to sell you, they come in a Ford, and their Ford is just barren of any caps at all. And they say, well, we just pull these off the car, and we're going to, you know, wait till we get some more money to buy a set of Starfires, be interested in these Ford caps. And that's generally the story. Or another one that's quite prevalent, that most of them actually seem to use this, that one I'm going to tell you now, is, well, these things keep falling off the corner of Rosecrans and Crenshaw as the guy turns the corner.
And when the junk dealer turns the youngsters down on his endeavor to sell or exchange the hubcaps he has in his possession, what then is the reaction?
Very indignant. Why? Just why don't you want to do it? We give them a real honest to goodness story. We have to make out a police report and wait 21 days, and so we just don't want to be bothered with that.
And the price being dickered?
The price drops to nothing when you show disinterest. You can just about give them a couple of cokes already, and they're willing to get rid of them, because they don't know where to really go with them, because wreckers, generally speaking, will not buy hubcaps off kids.
But there is a more serious side to the hubcap theft problem that you heard at the beginning of this program, as told by the Los Angeles businessman involved in the shooting of a juvenile. His experience with hubcap thefts has been as a plague.
Just a rough estimate, I would say this is close to 10 sets that I have lost since January the 1st on the same automobile.
One youth who had stolen a set of hubcaps from the victim returned to the scene of his crimes, not to steal again, but to have a talk with his victim.
Our boy brought four of my hubcaps back when he found that they were marked inside, and he tried to shake me down for $10, said that he had bought them, and would I give him his $10 back, and he'd return my hubcaps. A few nights later, one of my neighbors scared them off taking hubcaps out here again, and as I saw the car leave, I am reasonably sure that he was the same one in the same car again taking hubcaps.
Perhaps one of the most significant experiences the Los Angeles gentleman experienced was his encounter with a youth that involved himself being attacked.
Well, I was in a defensive situation. He was attempting to take the hubcaps off of a car. I told him to stay where he was, and he came at me, and I had been unloading my car over here, and we saw him. My daughter was standing out here, we saw him, and I got him by the leather jacket, and he attacked me, and we went around the street a little bit, but I brought him around and over across the street, and he slipped out of his leather jacket and escaped. He was a boy I'd estimate weighing about 190 pounds, a high school kid, and he gave us a pretty rough time.
What follows this is the most revealing of all. A letter addressed to the man that had been forced to strike out in the defense of his property and injure a young boy. A letter from the parents of that boy, telling their appreciation of what had been done. Let me read a bit of it to you. Dear sir, we are happy to report that the two bad gashes on our son's head are healing nicely, and the scar which he will carry through life will be a constant reminder to him that he is not to step out of line again. How the beating occurred is not important. The important fact is that our son deserved every blow, and to protect his property, he might have done exactly as you did. The boy's father and I actually are glad for the beating you gave our son. It was the kind of adult reaction he needed, since obviously his father and I can no longer spank. End of letter. And speaking of spanking and dealing with errant juveniles, here's one who has a positive philosophy all of his own. He claims it's done well for him.
When I was young, I guess we've all been a little thieving when we were small. But, I've had my tail beat by my dad early in the morning when he'd come home from work about 2 or 3 in the morning. And my mother'd tell him, and he broke me of the habit pretty young. My dad, I think, did me more better than having my name down on a record, you know what I mean? He beat the tar right out of me.
However, for some youngsters, caution and help came too late, and they find themselves in a police station being questioned about their activities, their fate waiting the action of a court, as is the boy you are about to hear. You heard him talking with police at the opening moments of my half hour with you. This is a boy who started out with hubcaps. Why?
I didn't do it for the kicks of it or anything, because I don't like stealing, period. It's just too much sweat in it. You don't know whether the police are going to catch up with you or not, but I just didn't want to go to the can there. Well, no, the first time and the last time, actually, I didn't need the money, But I guess I did it the time before to help me out of a jam, Well, I guess I just went on and did it a second time.
How old is he?
Well, I'm 18.
Time these were going on, you were 17 on some of these thefts.
No, I was 18 all the while.
May 28th, I turned 18.
Did you know that you were no longer a juvenile in the eyes of the law when you reached 18?
Yeah.
Looking back on it all, the boy had this to say in answer to police questions.
It just isn't worth it. All you gotta do is just think of the consequences if you're caught.
If
that ought to stop anybody. Just think of the worst that can happen.
Did you ever think of that at the time that you started to steal the hubcaps?
Yeah.
Well, then why? But it didn't seem to stop you. Now, is there anything stronger that you'd like to say that might deter a kid in the future from stealing?
Well, the guys that, my estimation, that go out and do it for the kicks, there's only one way to stop them, that's to catch them.
To catch them is not the complete answer. It goes much further than victim and thief. The answer lies in basic prevention, such as this half hour has tried to impress on you, the listener. You have heard many voices involved in the hubcap theft problem from all walks and levels of our society, and they all speak for one need, prevention. Identification of your automobile hubcaps will eliminate the greatest crux of the problem. As we have heard, the police to date have been all but powerless to prove identification of hubcaps when a thief is apprehended. And the victim himself can rarely prove identity of his own hubcaps when confronted with them in a police storage room. But with the license number of the automobile engraved indelibly on the hubcaps, it will be as incriminating as a fingerprint to the hubcap thief. Service station dealers say it will take all of 10 seconds to identify hubcaps for interested parties. Those 10 seconds could well save the automobile owner that time twice and twice again in dollars. A youngster, perhaps, from one day spending that time in months or years in prison. Wherever you see a hubcap identification poster, drive in and have your hubcaps identified. Save yourself potential trouble and a youngster potential dangerous temptation. This is asked by the Oil Industries Information Committee who thought up the idea, the police departments who have cooperated and endorsed this program, and by a mother whose son was shot.
You have been listening to Golden Hubcaps with Tom Harmon as your host narrator. All tape inserts were recorded in the field. Golden Hubcaps was produced and directed by Jules Maitland and Sterling Tracy for the CBS Radio Network.
All right, that's it. Golden Hubcap. Interesting. Now, for the second part of my presentation tonight, we're going to listen to Dragnet from April 26, 1951, Big Saint.
The story you are about to hear is true. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Fatima Cigarettes, best of all long cigarettes, brings you Dragnet.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned to auto theft detail. A well-organized ring of car thieves begins operations in your city. It's one of the most puzzling cases you've ever encountered. Your job? Break it. You'll be amazed when you compare Fatima with other long cigarettes.
You'll find they now cost the same. But in Fatima, the difference is quality.
You see, Fatima is the quality king-size cigarette because it contains the finest domestic and Turkish tobaccos superbly blended. And Fatima is extra mild, with a much different, much better flavor and aroma than any other long cigarette.
So compare Fatima yourself. Fatima's now cost the same as other long cigarettes, but your first puff will tell you...
Ah, that's different.
Yes, in Fatima, the difference is quality. Ask your dealer for Fatima, the quality king-size cigarette. Best of all long cigarettes. Start enjoying Fatima tomorrow.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Monday, May 11th. It was fair in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of auto theft detail. My partner's Ben Romero. The boss is Captain Stilson. My name's Friday. It was 8:35 a.m. when I got to room 40, auto theft division. Captain's office.
Morning, Friday.
Morning.
Hi, Joe.
Ben.
You want to sit down?
Thank you.
I was just telling Romero here, I'm briefing all the men in the bureau on this thing. That's the reason I called you two in.
Yeah.
I got some figures here I want to go over with you.
All right.
As you know, the percentage of all auto theft recoveries is 96 to 98% on the average. That's normally.
Yeah.
In checking the monthly averages the past 4 months, that percentage has dropped to the low 80s.
Quite a drop.
Mm-hmm. Corner Pocket thinks so, too. They want some action on it.
Well, we've been working on it.
Absolutely no pattern to the thefts. Time, location, the method makes it impossible to stake out on it.
Yeah, those are some of the reasons our percentage is taking such a dive. I know the problems, we all do, but we got to break this thing soon.
Well, it figures we're dealing with a well-organized bunch. They know what they're doing.
In cross-checking all the reports, it seems to boil down to this in general. It appears that all the outstanding thefts are GM cars. Cads, Pontiacs, Chevys, Oldsmobiles. All late models, all seem to be in good condition, low-mileage cars.
Well, in addition to the regular broadcast and teletypes, we got out a special bulletin on this, didn't we?
That's right. All the thefts were listed, license, make, model, and color.
Mm-hmm.
Been sent to all major cities and border patrol stations. Nothing so far.
I was checking through the salvage reports, salvage buys. Do you have the last 2 months' escaper, March and April?
Yeah, right here. I noticed the same thing. That outfit down on San Pedro Street?
Yeah, let me see. Oh, yeah. This is a composite on the reports for the past 2 months?
That's right.
This one here, Herman Salvage, 2716 West San Pedro. They seem to deal a little heavy on General Motors cars, don't they?
Yeah, they do. I've been watching the buys on this place for the past few weeks now. I wanted to make sure it wasn't coincidence.
Well, looks like a good place to run down anyway.
You two want to check it out?
All right, fine. 2716 West San Pedro.
That's it. Outfit appears to be okay. Never been out of line.
Seems funny they should deal with the top heavy in GM cars, doesn't it?
Right when our recovery percentage takes a dive, yeah.
Do you have the last salvage report there, Captain?
Yeah.
The last one?
Here you are.
Thank you. Yeah. Here's one for Herman's, 1949 Cadillac. And a little further down, Herman's again, 47 Olds. Yeah. There's five GM buys on the list. Herman got 4 out of 5 of them.
Let's find out why.
From the time an automobile is first manufactured and sold, a constant and complete record is maintained on that automobile. His certificate of ownership, the pink slip in the state of California. His certificate of registration, the white slip. These two slips of paper contain the information necessary for the positive identification of your car. Fact that every motorist knows. Now, there are many agencies that work for the protection and security of your automobile. One of these is the National Auto Theft Bureau, a kind of nationwide clearinghouse. Acting upon information supplied by the various insurance companies and other allied agencies, this bureau forwards all facts and figures concerning the disposition of motor vehicles on a nationwide basis. Reports are made available to all law enforcement agencies. One of the pieces of information put out by the National Auto Theft Bureau is the salvage report, listing all sales and purchases of automobiles that, for one reason or another, may have been relegated to the junkyard or to the salvage company, a fact that many motorists may not know. 9:14 a.m., Ben and I checked through the police commission and found that the owner of Herman Salvage was a Herman Lester. He had been in business at the same location for 6 years and appeared to be a reputable businessman. We drove down to 2716 West San Pedro to check it out. It was an average-looking garage with a connecting salvage yard filled with several hundred smashed-up cars of all makes and models. It was 9:32 a.m. when we walked into the garage.
There's a fellow there in a white shirt.
Yeah, I see him.
Can I help you, gentlemen?
Yes, sir. Police officers. Auto theft detail?
Oh, yes. I don't believe I know you fellas. My name's Lester.
This is Sergeant Friday. My name's Romero.
How you do?
How are you? Are you the owner here?
Yeah, that's right. Whatever happened to Mac and Donovan? Used to drop in once, twice a month. I haven't seen them for 2-3 weeks now.
Well, they're a little busy on a special assignment.
Oh, I see.
Art, if we look around here?
Oh, you bet. Make yourselves right at home. Anything special?
No, just looking.
Okay.
Notice you've been pretty busy, huh?
Yeah, had a pretty good month. Salvage racket's gonna get sour again, looks like, with the Korean War and all the cutbacks.
Doesn't seem to have hit you so far.
Well, no, not so far. Looks like it may tighten up any time.
I noticed from our salvage report you've been doing a big business in GM merchandise.
Yeah, we have. You know, they're starting to build tanks back there now. We wanted to make sure we wouldn't run short on parts.
You get a lot of call for GM parts, do you?
Oh, yeah, we sure do. Everybody in town knows if they need something for a Caddy or a Buick or any of those cars, this is the place to come. We kind of built up a reputation specializing in GM used parts.
I see. Mind if we check your last few buys?
Fine.
You have a 49 Cadillac, 47 Olds, Pontiac 48, 1949 Chevrolet. Wonder if we might see those.
Yes, sir. Right out in the yard. Back this way. All four of them are really bent up, bad shape. Just breaks your heart to see beautiful merchandise like that all smashed up. I don't know what people are thinking of the way they drive.
Yeah.
And you take a new Caddy, one of those new convertibles, really beautiful merchandise. Somebody takes one out, rolls it, we pick it up and tow it down here. Beautiful car like that all rolled up in a ball.
Georgia Street Receiving Hospital probably picked up the rear.
Yeah, it was really a shame. Well, here we go. There's a caddy.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see. The Olds and the Pontiac are in that row there. You see him?
Yeah, uh-huh.
And that Chevrolet, wasn't it?
Yes, sir, 1949.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, there she is over there. Third car down, maroon. See it?
Maroon one, yeah, down there.
Yeah. Looks like a graveyard, doesn't it?
Sure does. What'll you do with all these cars? Strip them down for parts?
Well, at least the four you're checking now, yeah. They're all total wrecks. Nothing much can be done with them except for parts.
Mm-hmm. How about that Cadillac down there, the sedan?
Huh?
That one over there, can't you fix that one up? That doesn't look beyond repair from here.
Oh, step around the other side here. You can't see from where you're standing. Here. And the right side's all stove in. By the time you figure replacing those side panels and fenders, trim, we couldn't come out on it.
Yeah, I see now. Well, I don't know too much about it, but it looked good from over there.
Yeah, that's what we get all the time. People want us to pay top prices for stuff we can't get our money out of. If we could repair them, fix them up, and resell them as a complete automobile, there'd be a lot of money in this business.
You do that with some of them, don't you?
Oh, very few of them, I'll tell you. That's what we look for, but we don't always get lucky.
Mm-hmm, I see.
Say, how'd you boys like to see some really beautiful merchandise?
What's that?
Well, come on back in the shop.
All right.
Kind of a hobby of mine.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what keeps us busy. Plates and pink slips on the way up to Sacramento for cancellation.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, over this way. Here we are. Take a look at this baby.
Yeah. Hot rod, huh?
No, not exactly. We don't go in for that kid stuff racing around town.
Well, sure, looks like one.
Yeah, but it's a little better than most of the kids can throw together.
What'll it do?
We clocked her up at Muroc at 112 last weekend. You know, they've been coming in here from all over town to see this car.
That's so?
Yeah. You ever get up to Muroc Dry Lake?
No, I never do, but that's the place for it. Running around town on those things can cause a lot of accidents.
Those drag races the kids have, yeah. We don't go in for that stuff. This is strictly scientific as far as I'm concerned. I like to build them up, see what we can make them do.
Cost a lot of money, don't they?
Got $5,400 in this one right now. I'm putting more into it. Mallory ignition, milled heads, twin Wakefields. Here, let me start it up for you.
Okay.
120 horses under there.
Yeah, sounds good.
Listen at that. Beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah.
A lot of power here.
Go in.
You ought to see it up at the lake. It really goes.
Yeah, I'll bet. This all made up out of salvage cars?
Every bit of it. Have to buy a few things new, but most of it's right out of wrecks like those outside there.
Takes a lot of talent to build up something like this from scrap, doesn't it?
No, not really. After you've been at it long as I have, it's not too tough. The trick is to get more speed out of them than anyone else can.
Yeah, you did a good job on this car, right?
Oh, if you put your mind to it, you can do a lot with a wrecked car.
Before we left Herman's salvage, we checked all four of the GM cars that were listed on the salvage report. We made a careful check on all of the cars in the yard and in the garage, paying special attention to the few cars that were in the process of being rebuilt by Herman Lester's mechanics. We went over his records, carefully checking the disposition of all of his buys for the past several months. Everything was in perfect order. We found that in the past 3 weeks, Lester had taken in 10 cars. 8 of them had been stripped down for parts, and 2 of them had been rebuilt and resold. The investigation showed that 4 of those cars were GM cars, and the 2 that were resold were both General Motors. 11:28 a.m. Ben and I drove back to the office and asked Mac and Donovan if they'd check through the 2 resale cars to make sure everything was in order, as the reports indicated. We checked through on the remaining 8 cars that were listed by Herman Lester as broken down for parts. According to DMV, all plates and pink slips had been returned to them for cancellation. 11:50 a.m.
Well, that's it, Joe.
Yeah.
8 of the cars check out. 2 of those were GMs.
Yeah, well, that leaves just the 2 that Mac and Donovan are checking, huh?
Oh, I don't know. Everything down there looked all right. It's a cinch Lester wasn't holding back anything, as far as I could tell. It's cooperative, everything in order.
If those 2 that Mac and Donovan are working on check out.
I got a hunch they will. Seems to me Lester told us everything. Everything we asked him, anyway. I don't think he held back.
If he did, I got an idea who might be able to tell us somebody's been left out in the cold here.
What are you getting at?
Well, now, if Herman's been able to buy up all those GM cars, what have the other salvage dealers been doing about it?
That's a thought.
Let's check his competition.
12:40 p.m. We drove back down to West San Pedro Street. We picked out a group of salvage companies in the immediate neighborhood close to Herman's. 3209 West San Pedro, John's Wrecking Yard. We introduced ourselves and started to talk with the owner, a John Bacon. A routine check was made of his establishment, and as far as we could tell, everything appeared to be okay.
And that's all you made, huh? Just that one buy?
That's it. 1946 Ford. We're dying a slow death.
Business is pretty bad, huh?
Never seen it worse. At least as far as we're concerned.
How do you account for that, Mr. Bacon?
Oh, everything, I guess. Business bad all over at the moment. Scrap metal situation's in a state of flux at the present time.
In looking around, Mr. Bacon, we noticed you don't have much in the way of General Motors stuff. Is that because of GM going into war production? Any cutback would eventually affect you fellows, wouldn't it?
No, not at all. Cutback would, sure, but there's no tremendous curtailment right at the present time. They're still turning out a lot of automobiles back there.
Well, then what's your problem?
We're being outbid, right up and down the line by the same outfit.
Who's that, sir?
A company by the name of Herman Salvage, just up the street there. Go out to buy a piece of merchandise, their boys just won't let us get near it.
They pay more than you do, huh?
More than we can, Sergeant. I honestly don't see how they're coming out on some of their deals.
It's that much out of line, huh?
Certainly is. You know, whenever there's anything available, all the salvage companies get their bid in. Well, Herman simply outbids all of us.
Yeah, it makes it kind of rough.
I'm not the only one. Pete Larkin up the street, old man Henry next door, all of us. I don't know what we can do about it. Herman seems to be doing all right, no matter what he pays for his cars.
Mm-hmm.
None of us can figure it out. Just judging from the number of cars he outbids us on and the number he rebuilds, I just can't see how he's coming out.
But he is, huh?
Figure he's laying odds on a big shortage. That's what all of us think.
He's laying in the stockpile. Is that the idea?
Sure. What else could it be?
We continued our check on all salvage dealers, both in the neighborhood of Herman Lester's place and throughout the city. It seemed to be a fact well known to most dealers that Herman was outbidding all of them on any and all GM automobiles. The only possible explanation was that he must be trying to lay in a large stockpile of this particular make of car. 3:35 p.m. We received word from Sergeants Mack and Donovan that they had checked out the two remaining cars listed in Herman's books, the resales. Ben was right. They checked out with no discrepancy. During the next 10 days, the investigation continued. The theft of late model GM cars continued with few recoveries. Suspects were arrested and questioned. We could find no connection that might lead us to an organized ring of car thieves that might be responsible for the lack of GM car recoveries. The salvage report showed no change in Herman's buying technique. Apparently, he was still dealing heavy on the one particular make of car. Thursday, May 25th. We received a teletype from DMV listing all the salvage buy transfers. In making our usual daily check of this teletype, we noticed a 1949 Cadillac, engine number 598-77415. It had been resold from salvage to a used car lot.
That's the place right up the block.
Yeah, I see.
Same cad we saw in Herman Salvage Yard.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? The one in particular that I asked him about, you remember?
Yeah, I remember. You thought it could be fixed up. He said no.
It's only been a little over 2 weeks ago, hasn't it?
Yeah, I try.
Well, still doesn't prove anything.
Here we are. Jake's. This is the place.
Yeah, there's a cad in the front line right down there, huh?
Mm-hmm. I don't see anyone around, do you?
No, I don't. Well, I guess it's all right to check the engine number anyway.
Yeah, I'll get the hood release.
Right. Yeah, there we go. Yeah, the engine's had a good steam cleaning. Let's see. 598-77415.
That's it. Herman sure did a nice job on it, didn't he?
Yeah. Almost looks too good, doesn't it?
Yeah, just a minute.
Yeah.
Body serial doesn't match. Doesn't correspond with the engine model.
It's a 49 body. Could be a late 49, but it's a definite switch, isn't it?
It sure is. That's funny.
Yeah. Look at this right side here.
This was the bad side, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
Does it look like it's been rolled out to you?
No, there's no feathering, no orange peel. Either that's the best repaint job I've ever seen, or it's never been in an accident.
Yeah. I'll take a look underneath, huh?
All right.
Okay. Want to move your feet there?
Yeah, all right. Anything?
No, nothing. There's not a seam or a joint under there. No welding marks of any kind. This car's never been in a smash-up.
The engine number checks, the body doesn't.
And this is the one Herman couldn't fix up.
Yeah, that's what he said. Maybe he changed his mind.
Or he lied.
You are listening to Dragnet. From beginning to end, Dragnet is the authentic story of your police force in action.
Now, from beginning to end, the Fatima story. Actual convincing proof that in Fatima, the difference is quality.
Quality of tobaccos. The finest domestic and Turkish varieties, extra mild and superbly blended to give you a much different, much better flavor and aroma.
Quality of manufacture. Smooth, round, perfect cigarettes. Rolled in the finest paper money can buy. Manufactured in the newest and most modern of all cigarette factories.
Quality, even to the appearance of the bright, clean, golden yellow package. Carefully wrapped and sealed to bring you Fatima's rich, fresh, extra mild flavor.
Because of its quality, its extra mildness, its better flavor and aroma, more long cigarette smokers are now insisting on Fatima than ever before.
So if you smoke a long cigarette, compare Fatima. You'll find they now cost the same. But your first puff will tell you,
ah, that's different.
Yes, in Fatima, the difference is quality. Insist on Fatima. Start enjoying the quality king-size cigarette. Fatima. Best of all long cigarettes.
...1949 Cadillac, engine number 598-77415. In checking out this automobile, Ben and I had found that the engine number corresponded with the salvage report concerning Herman Lester's place. The one big item that did not jibe was the fact that the engine was now mounted in a different body than when the car left the factory. A fact that had to be accounted for in complete detail. When we had checked this automobile on the 11th of May at Herman's salvage yard, both engine and body numbers corresponded. In taking a close look at the car, it was obvious that the body had not been repaired in any way. It was clear that this particular car had not been in any kind of collision. We went back to the rear of the lot and asked one of the salesmen not to sell the car without informing us. When we got back to the office, we started rechecking all of the auto theft reports. We found 5 stolen Cadillacs, but all the body styles and models were different, with the exception of one, a 1949 Cadillac sedan, reported stolen on May 14th. It was registered in the name of William Brownell. We checked his home and found that he was at work. He was a superintendent for the North American Van Lines. We drove over and picked him up and took him to Jake's used car lot on Vermont Avenue.
This is the car, Mr. Brownell.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's just like mine, but I don't think it's the one.
Are you sure?
For one thing, it's a different color. My car was maroon.
You want to step over here, Mr. Brownell?
Sure.
Now, if you'll look very closely here on the door edging and on the jamb, right here, see? This is the one place sometimes they miss with a spray gun if they're going to repaint.
Oh, yeah, there's a faint trace of red under the blue paint there.
Looks like it could be maroon, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does it there.
This car's been repainted. It was maroon.
Uh-huh. Well, mine didn't have these kind of seat covers. Let's see. Same kind of upholstery I had, though, underneath here. I don't know.
Mr. Brownell, there must be something other than the color in the upholstery that you'd know your own car by.
Never gave it much thought.
Well, there's usually some little identifying mark of some kind. I know that on my car, the lens on the right headlight got broken, and I had to replace it with one that didn't match.
Something like that, sir?
Let me see. Could I look inside there a minute?
Sure.
Right here under the speedometer, There was a thumbprint pressed in at the factory. It was pretty deep. No, it's not there now.
Mm-hmm. And don't forget that the car's been repainted. It might have been covered up.
No, this was clear down to the metal. Apparently, when they were installing the instruments at the factory, the panel wasn't dry yet. Not there now, and they couldn't have covered it up unless they made a special point of it.
Well, sometimes that's done. Car thieves are kind of clever.
Well, I'm sorry, gentlemen. I don't think this is my car. Don't think I don't wish it was, but it's not.
Can you think of just one other thing, maybe? Just one mark of identification is all we need.
No. Even these tires aren't mine. I had white sidewalls.
Oh, could have been switched.
They were pretty new. Wait a minute. I think I remember something. No, there's no rip up there.
What's that, sir?
I just thought of something. The boys down at the office gave me a St. Christopher medal. You know, the large metal kind you're supposed to bolt to your dashboard?
Yes, sir.
I didn't want to put it on, so I carried it around with me in the car. There was a rip up there in the inner lining of the top, but you see, there's no rip in this.
Let me see. How about it, Ben? Yeah. Yeah, I can feel it.
Does it feel like a metal?
Let me get my pocket knife on it.
Okay.
What do you think? They replaced the cloth up there?
I don't know. Yeah. Yeah, here it is.
Mm-hmm. Is this it, Mr. Brownell?
That's it. Look, on the back there, my name's engraved on it, you see?
Yes, sir.
Well, I sure didn't think this was my car. I never would have known it.
That's what the guys figured who stole it. The 1949 Cadillac was taken to the police garage and a complete and thorough check was made. The car, with the exception of the engine, was positively identified as the property of William Brownell. This definitely implicated Herman Lester and showed his salvage operations to be illegitimate. He had obviously been buying one particular make of salvage automobile, outbidding all his competitors to do so. When he would buy a piece of wrecked equipment, an exact duplicate would be stolen to match it. He would then dispose of the engine from the stolen vehicle and replace it with a salvage engine. With this system of operation, Herman Salvage had been enjoying a lucrative business, which accounted for a great percentage of the stolen cars that we hadn't been able to recover. 7:25 p.m., May 25th. We drove out to pick up Herman Lester. His home address was listed as 8625 Wonderland Drive. It was up in the Laurel Canyon District, a heavily wooded section of Los Angeles.
Pretty nice place up in there.
Yeah, which you can see of it through the trees.
Well, let's go.
Mm-hmm.
Look at that, Joe.
Yeah.
Looks like a 50 Olds. Everything there but the engine. No plates.
Mm-hmm. I didn't notice that from the street, did you?
Never could have seen it from down there.
Mm-hmm. Looks like a garage back up in there, doesn't it?
Perfect spot. Can't see any of this from the street with all those trees. Pretty fancy layout for a home garage. Good size.
Yeah. Somebody's working up in there.
Yeah.
Come on.
Hi there. Brings you fellas right up here.
Want to have a little talk with you.
Oh, you bet. Come on in the house. Have a cold beer, huh?
No, this will be all right.
Joe, you got a hot sheet?
Yeah, right here.
Kind of caught me by surprise here, working out in the garage.
Yeah, that figures, Lester. These plates are from a stolen car.
You sure?
That's right.
You remember a 49 Cadillac we looked at down at your place a couple of weeks ago?
Oh, I'm not sure. 49 Cad?
That's right. Whatever became of that car?
Oh, now I remember. Yeah, I sold that car to Jake's over in Vermont.
Thought you told us you couldn't fix it up.
I don't remember. You sure you don't mean some other car now?
No, it's the same one. You know the one we mean. How about it?
How about what?
That was a stolen car, Lester, and you know it. That's a stolen car out there in the yard, isn't it?
Watch that hoist, Ben! There he goes, Joe! All right, Lester, hold it! Duck it, duck, Joe! All right, now, come on. Drop it, Lester. Drop the hammer.
Go on me!
All right. I'll get the cuffs, Joe.
Oh, come on, get up on your feet.
All right, come on. On your feet.
Stand still.
Rough one, huh?
Yeah.
Come on, Lester. Let's go.
How'd you find out? Who tipped you off?
St. Christopher.
The story you just heard was true. Only the names were changed to protect the innocent.
On August 15th, trial was held in Superior Court, Department 82, City and County of Los Angeles, State of California. In a moment, the results of that trial.
And now, here is our star, Jack Webb.
Thank you. Friends, one of the first things a detective learns is that you can't rely on snap judgments or first appearances. You get all the evidence first, and then you arrive at a decision. And that's just as true when it comes to choosing a king-size cigarette. Place a Fatima alongside any other king-size cigarette. Now, side by side, they'll look identical. When you smoke them, you'll find a world of difference. You'll find, as I have, in Fatima, the difference is quality. Quality that gives you extra mildness, a much better flavor and aroma. If you haven't smoked Fatimas yet, buy a pack tomorrow and see if you don't agree. In Fatima, the difference is quality.
Herman W. Lester was tried and convicted on 3 counts of grand theft auto and 2 counts of grand theft money, all sentences to run consecutively. Grand theft auto was punishable by imprisonment for a term of 1 to 5 years, grand theft money by a term of 1 to 10 years. The suspect was also filed on by federal authorities for violation of the Dyer Act. You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department.
Fatima Cigarettes, best of all long cigarettes, has brought you Dragnet, portions transcribed from Los Angeles.
Stay tuned for Counter Spy, next over many NBC stations.
From April 26, 1951, that was Dragnet, the big save date. Well, that's going to do it for tonight. Hopefully see you back again sometime soon. I don't know exactly when I'll be back, but I'll be back. Until then, have a great evening.
Okay, Ronnie, thanks a lot, and great work as usual. You've set them up, now it's my turn to knock them down, because that's it. We've reached the end of our broadcast hour, and we'll be shutting things down for this week's broadcast of Michael's Saturday Night Surprise. But don't worry, we will be back again, because this month, you know, there's a couple of cool things going on. We've got some MSS shows, as well as the Christmas Time Marathon. So all you guys have to do is sit tight and join us again. You know where, you know when, and you know how. If you have any questions, comments, complaints, or maybe even a request or two, please address them to the MSS director. He can be found at mikeamelli@earthlink.net. That's MIKEAMELI@earthlink.net. We will soon be releasing the key and returning the room to you, the listening audience. Please do with it as you wish, for as long as you wish. And just remember, be nice to one another, because it is the season. On behalf of myself and the rest of the MSS crew, have a great night, a great weekend, a great holiday season, and goodbye.